Accession number 10602, Reel 3.
Accession number 10602, Reel 3.
G. Elliott, Reel 3. We've been talking about miners and mining, Mr. Elliott. Did this work toughen you up? You started as a young boy. Was it tough work?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was hard work. When I first started work, I had to go to Shotton Colliery, which there was no public transport, there was no public lighting. And that would be roughly 2 to 3 miles away. Hail, rain or snow, you had to turn out. In either early morning or afternoon, and you would come back early morning, about before midday. But where the work was 8 hours and 20 minutes with the travelling from Wheatley Hill to Shotton and back again, worked out about 10 hours a day. So when I used to get home and get bathed in front of the fire, it was bedtime, and by the time I got up, it was work time, and this went on for all the time I worked at Shotton.
And you were able to cope with the heavy physical work as a young boy?
Well, as a young boy, they didn't give you heavy physical work when you first started. They kind of broke you in. Little jobs they would give you to get you used to the mine itself, because believe me, when you went down, you had no idea what it was like. Now, I'd been lucky enough, just before I finished schooling, to go down with my granddad at Wheatley Hill for a look around, which was usual customs in those days. If a lad was finishing school, if a member, his father or relations, was suitable, which was generally the all-night shift, was suitable to take them down to let them have a look around. But when he went down in that shift, the old works was more or less standing. You only went in when the maintenance workers was in. That was the all-night men who did the enlarging of the ways. The travelling ways or the work ways, when they were heightened or widened. Now, the men used to do that between, say, 10 o'clock at night and round about 5 to 6 o'clock the next morning, because there was no coal worked in those hours.
Were you nervous going down into this darkness for the first time?
To be quite honest, yes. I was always nervous in the cage. Don't ask me to explain it, because I cannot. Because they used to travel very fast, and when the cages passed, you always thought you were coming back up instead of going down. And when you were coming up, you thought you were going down. Yeah, I used to dream sometimes about it, about the cages. Yeah. I think most miners would have done. Because I've heard the lads say, like I've just said, it was an experience. Somehow, it was always there. I never felt safe in the cages than what I did down in the mine itself. The travelling in the cage and on the steel rope that took you down. They used to travel so fast. But you got used to it, and you had to walk. I'm not sure what they do nowadays in the mines, but we had to walk sometimes just around the shaft bottom. There would be the stables. If you're a pony driver or a putter, you'd have to go to the stables and get a pony out, and you'd be responsible for that pony for the full time you had it out, till you returned it to the stable. And pity help you if there was any marks on the pony.
Was there any cruelty towards the animals? Or in what regard were they kept in the pit?
They were really kept well. There used to be some sayings that they looked more after the animals than they did look after the workers. But the horse keepers would check every pony when it came back in. And if there was, you know, what they thought, maybe there'd been a mark on it, they would grab the driver, the pony driver or the pony putter. And they would point it out to them and tell them, if it happened again, they would be in front of the manager. And they would. They looked after the ponies. The ponies were well looked after. But you know, if you got assigned to one pony, you'd get to know everything about it, and it would get to know everything about you. And mind, if they found a weakness, they would play on it. They were little devils at times. Oh, aye.
How long were they kept down the pits before they were brought up into light?
I cannot answer that one, because once they went down, they stayed down until they came out finished. I mean, it depends on the years. The only time I know of them being brought out was in the 1926 coal strike, when the general strike was on. Then I think every mine in the country brought all the ponies up who were using ponies. They were all brought to the surface and allowed to run around in the fields. But once the strike was over, I cannot remember of any pony, unless it was ill. And if the pony was ill and they couldn't cure it down in the stables, they would bring it to surface, and they would have stables on the surface where they would get first class treatment. They looked after. I worked at the two collieries, Shotton and Wheatley Hill, and at no time can I ever remember a pony being ill used, really ill used. I mean, you sometimes, you know, you ought to be a bit stern with them, but the little blighters would sometimes take off, and it was dangerous if they took off. You know, they were so trained that they would turn around and wait, but then you'd get the odd one who would off, and when he went off, you had to run after him to catch him, or you had to shout if there was any other workers to try and stop him, because it could cause a real accident. Accident to the pony as well.
What kind of dangers had you to be taught to beware of, to be careful with?
No contraband first. That is, cigarettes, matches, or anything burning materials. Strictly. And then you had to test your lamp. When you went to the lamp cabin and handed your token in, the lamp cabin man would give you your lamp according to the number on the token. Now, if there was a serious accident in any mine, that token would say who the person was who was missing. In, you say, you know, say an explosion where there was a lot of deaths or where there was caves in. Those tokens not claimed. With the lamps being, the people who would return from the mine would put the lamps in, take the tokens out. The tokens would be left in the lamp cabin for the ones who were maybe still in the mine. And that's how they know the people who were entombed or who are not coming out. Now, we had oil lamps, Davy safety oil lamps, and you had to test them before you handed them back. You lit them yourself. And you had them back to the lamp cabin man, who would seal them with a lead seal. Now, you could not open that lamp. Well, you could if you want. If you were that way given, you could have done, because you could have got something to got the lead, soft lead out. But by Lord, if you had, if there was anything wrong with that, you'd have been paid off straight away. They were very, very strict on safety. That is one thing. Now, you had wagon weighmen, and those wagon weighmen had to every shift inspect the rollers and drums, which the steel ropes for the haulage would run on. And if any of those rollers were stopped not running, say they'd seized up, it was their job to make sure that someone came, some workman or maintenance man, loosen them. And that was very strict. Now then, you had the deputies and the shot firers. The deputies was day workers, the shot firers was the all night workers. And they would test for gas before any blasting was done. Now, you know, we're talking about in the days when it was pick and shovel, and miners worked right at the coal face, not with the machines they've got now. It was all done by hand. And the deputies, or the shot firers, would test with a lamp to see if there was any gas in the area.
How did that lamp work?
I think, I never saw them do it, but what I think happened, they tested the flame. And it, I think if there was a blue top to the flame, it said there was danger, gas. So when that happened, these deputies or the shot firers would bring the men away from the coal face to find out for safety reasons. They would be brought out. They were brought out to a safe, what they would consider a safe area. You see, they had to control the airflow from the two mines, the two shafts. One would be the downcast shaft and the other would be the upcast shaft. The compressed air would be sent down the downcast, and there would be airways away from the main working ways, and the airflow is controlled by either canvas doors or wooden doors, in so the air would circulate right around. Now, as I've explained, if there was any sign of gas, the men would be brought out and they would go to see if any of these doors was not fully closed or something like that. You know, I was only about 17 and a half when I was allowed to work near the coal face. The only people who were allowed to work at the coal face were coal ewers and putters. And they would be all on piecework. Now, the only other people who would go to the coal face would be the deputies, the shot firers, or the overman, or the manager. But the other people would not be allowed to leave what we called flats. Now, drivers would have to stop at the flat end, and that's where the putter started, to the coal face. And the coal ewers and putters were the only people on the coal face, barring the colliery overman. That's the deputy overman or the overman.
Were there any accidents in your experience, in your time?
Mine accidents, yes, but there was deaths as well. I know when I started work at Shotton Colliery, I was given a driver's job for the first time. I'd done a number of little jobs, and the wagon weighman thought I was ready for driving. And I went into this from the landing to the flat with the empty tubs, or chummins as we called them in those days. An empty tub was a chummin and a full tub was a fullin. So going in by, that was going to the coal face, I was driving the pony in when I thought I saw a ghost. I know that sounds crackers, but...
We've got this on tape, actually.
Have you got it?
We've got the story, yes.
So, I thought there was a ghost there. And the same night, I was moved from that. The wagon weighman came the next time I was out, came in with me, and he says, point out where the ghost was, and where I pointed. It's where a putter had been killed. He moved me from there to a new place, and the same day a ewer was killed at the coal face. Now, other things that happened, I know of one case where a set was coming out of Crow's House District, be a set of about 40 tubs. And whatever it was, something happened. The cow, which they put on the back of the last tub with two prongs on, was supposed to stick into the ground should any weight come back, and somehow this didn't happen and the tubs piled up and brought the roof in. So the district was closed for a period of time, but they got the workmen to clear that up. There was the other time when I was on off-tax work, that's halfway in by between districts, where I had to be responsible for the coupling up of the steel ropes for to bring the sets out from the two different districts. And I was on four shift this day, and the first set out I thought there was something wrong, and I stopped the set to make sure for safety. And when I stopped the set, the lad at the shaft bottom wanted to know why I'd stopped the set, because you only stop the sets in an emergency. And I explained that I thought there was something wrong with the tail rope. Then the master shifter, who was the overman from the 10 till 6 shift, he got on the phone. He told me if there wasn't anything wrong with the tail rope, I could put my coat on and go home. That's how strict they were. Anyhow, I went along to where I thought this trouble was, and I found a hedgehog on the rope. And I found out that there was an hedgehog on the rope, and they couldn't take the set away for safety. So my job was safe, but I would have been sacked.
The relationships down the pit itself between the men were very close.
Very.
Because it was a dangerous place.
Yes. Oh, yes. I learnt a lot from a lad called Billy McCrae. He was a bit older than I was, but I worked with him longer than I'd work with anyone else, and we were more or less unsupervised by the wagon wheelmen. Maybe come in once in a blue moon to see us because everything went well. But Billy was a very, very good lad to work with. As a matter of fact, we became, as the miners used to say in those days, we became good marers. Now, Billy taught me quite a lot of things which you can only pick up by experience. Practical experience is the only thing. And believe me, most of the old miners, I don't know about the present day ones, but most of the old miners did believe in the practical experience. And I know for certain fact that I could have had serious accidents if Billy hadn't been present. And the same with him. He maybe get himself into a bit of a problem, and I'll be there and give him help and hand out. And I know for a fact I would have had serious accidents once or twice because of cave-ins, of the roof falling in while I was in the area, and he would come straight away. And another thing, not only with humans, but the animals, the ponies, they had a sense that it's unbelievable. I had a pony. He was as docile, hard-working as you could get. And I would say, "How are you, lad?" And he would follow me. But this day, I would send him out because we had an engine pulling the... It was a bit steep for ponies, and we had a tail rope, a single-drum engine. Compressed air engine would pull the tubs out. I would take the chummins in with the pony and pull on the tail rope in, and I would turn them round. And when I got the full tubes coupled up and chained to the rope, I would say to Charlie, and he got halfway out and he wouldn't budge another inch. And no matter what I said to him, what I did to him, he just stood there. Now, Billy came from the engine house, which we call it. He, "What's the matter?" I said, "He's not come past." I said, "I cannot get the set away," which we'd call a number of tubes. It would be a set, whether it was single rope or double rope. It would be a set. I said, "I cannot wrap the set away, man." I said, "He'll not move." And he stood, and we tried always to lead him, and he would not move. And not long afterwards, the roof fell in, just in front of him. Not where he was standing, but just in front of him. And that is as true as I'm sitting here. And they were like that. They seemed to have a sixth sense, which we never knew of. And... He was a good pony. I had him for the longest. He was the longest one I had. He only had one eye, but he was still good. And you know, he wouldn't eat sweets, which was rather amazing, because every pony, if you had any on them, they smelt them, they'll be in your pocket. And he wouldn't. But mind, if I went to my granddad's garden and got a carrot, he would take my hand off. But he wouldn't go for the mint sweets, because being a non-drinker and smoker, I was always having a packet of mints in my pocket or something like that, and used to, you know, you could smell them miles off. Same as with you, if you opened an orange or an apple, you were eating it, you could smell it hundreds of yards away. But by the ponies, who'd be after it? No. You had a one.
This comradeship between miners underground.
Oh, good.
Was that similar to the kind of comradeship that you had in your regiment, when you were actually with, again, many, possibly many miners, particularly during the war?
That's difficult to say. I think when I was soldiering, there was a comradeship there which is completely different. The mining comradeship was very, very close. How can I explain it? Difficult. But once you were trained, you see, when you were in the mines, you were your own person. But when you were in the army, when I enlisted, you were trained. One was voluntary, where the other was more or less enforced, if that's the right kind of comparison I can make. You see, your life underground was on tap any minute of the day, where it was only when you were on active service that came, and when that came, you were very close. In a sense, I would say yes, the closeness, and there weren't all miners, there was a lot of people from all over, mostly miners and mostly shipyard workers or heavy industrial workers, but you've got the few others who people underestimate, was the fishermen, the trawlermen. They had tough lives, and some of them left the trawlers to come into the army, especially from Hull. And we had a few Hull lads in the regiment, and they were good lads. But in the mines, as I say, anything could happen at any second. But when you were in the army, when you were trained, when you first went in, you were, soon as you started as a squad, you were trained to look after each other, because you never knew when you were going to be called out for an emergency, and that was for civil or war. You see, the normal police force can only call out the armed forces in this country if they believe they cannot control any incident which is happening and they need military assistance. So you were trained from the moment you went in to look after each other. And you did. It was knocked into you that you were the best, and by God, we were the best. Make no mistake about that. We never got the kudos other outfits got, but our record will stand up against any regiment, even the SAS or the commandos. For full-time war, I'm not talking about just small incidents, I'm talking about a full-time war like the Second War or the First World War, and I think my regiment would stand up against anybody, and I'm not boasting, historical fact.
To go back to the pits again, there mustn't have been much space to move in if you had a horse or...
Oh, some of the workways was wide, you know. You went in from the shaft bottom, and when you would come to the landings, now that would be like a railway station, a terminal of a railway station, of a mainline railway station. Well, example, if you take Durham Station as it used to be, you had railway lines which would come to Sunderland, you'd had railway lines which would go to Merton, you'd have another railway line which would go through the Bowburns or Kellott, Fishburn, Trimden Grange. You'd have a railway line there. There would all be separate platforms. Now, Durham Railway Station would be the main one. Now, you could class that as a landing. Now, the coal face would be in by from the London. Now, there may be three districts and maybe more, but generally, my experience was there was three. One going straight in, one to the right, and one to the left. I can explain that. It may sound a bit daft, but in those places, you had what they called a long wall coal face. That is, a coal face which would be just one long wall. But it would be worked from different sections. And those sections coming out of the London, you would have a flat to the right, a flat to the left, and a flat straight in. Now, once you come to the end of those flats, was where the putters started, and the coal used would be further in. Now, you might have... The coal ewers used to work in groups of six. That was two men a shift. That's what they called maras. Now then, you may have two men, say, working here. You would have two men working there, two men working there, and so on. And that's why you had, when you came in, you would have one to the left, one to the right, and one straight forward. But they would work in on that same coal face. And they'll keep that coal face going forward. Now then, every time they wanted to make a main, another landing, say, that had gone so far underground that they had to do away with the side ones, they would just close the side ones down and move further in. And that's where the men who started at 10 o'clock at night would go in and enlarge from where the landing had ended. They would just continue on with that large, maybe, maybe from this side of the wall to that side of the wall. But it wouldn't be as high as the roof. It'd maybe be about 6 feet, 6 feet high. Most of the time you had your head bent when you were going in, but some of it would be 6 feet with the pressure of the earth coming down on the what's they call them, the props and the balks of timber. Now then, in the coal face they had planks, the thinner timber to keep the roof up while they got the coal out. Now when they'd gone so far in with the coal, they would get the stone men, that's the night shift men, to go in at night, and they would take the stone down so that when the coal ewers went in, they would start more or less level with the stone, the coal face. Now there was another system which worked, which they called boards and walls. Now that would be worked in like squares or triangles, if you can understand that, where you had the long wall face that way. You would have a landing, and then it's quite possible just out of the landing you could have a left and you could have a right. And you would have a one going up. But the one going straight in would only go so far, then you would have two cutting off it. Now these two, the first two, would go so far in, then they would go forward. And this operated for quite a long while, and that's what they call boards and walls. It was just so wide, they just took so much coal out, and kept it so wide and so high. And each board would meet each other and they would come to a T-junction. Then they would start working up. Now then, when they'd got to the end of the lease of the land, I think, or, you know, when they come to the end of the... where the colliery was allowed to work, they would just stop. Then they would start coming back and they would bring all the coal out. They would take each section, they would take the coal out and just let the roof come down. But that was different to the boards and walls. To the long wall coal face, the coal was taken all the way in. And I have a funny feeling that the modern day mining which was going on was done by machines which went right across the coal face, which would be a long wall. But I'm talking about when it was all hand done, not machines, it was all hand.
You mentioned 1926 and the strikes. How did they affect you personally?
A bit grim. Well, that was my second time of going to soup kitchens. For a start off, and well, we lost the issue of coal from the mine for cooking with, so we had to go out digging up holes all over the place trying to find coal or find old wood to keep the food from being cooked. There was a great shortage of money, which meant everybody else was short.
Did this bring the community even closer?
It was very, very close. People helped each other where they could and where they possibly could.